Block out your life with Triple J podcasts.
I'm so bored. I hate waiting in queues.
Block out the bank with the Tom and Alex podcast.
Where did the word charlatans
come from? Alex.
Block out the train with the doctor podcast. Block out the city with the new music podcast. Block out your workmates, your parents, your friends with the Unearthed podcast and Sunday Night Saffron and Hack and Zan and the live music podcast and Richard Kingsmill's podcast and Dr. Carl's got a podcast. Triple J, triple pod. Pod Triple
Cast. Just search for Triple J Podcasts.
I've got a podcast, Doctor Podcast, Triple J.
On a Thursday morning.
Sam.
And
Zan Rowe on Triple J Mornings.
Mornings.
On Triple J.
Triple J.
And Dr. Carl on a Thursday morning, as he always is. Dr. Carl, welcome.
Good morning. I am befuddled and bemused and bedazzled. What is this rhyming name, three-letter name thing happening?
Sam, Zan and Carl, you're the odd one out.
I am. Now, explain to me about Sam.
Sam Simmons, earlier this week, threw down a bit of a diss, I guess, if you will, at Tom and Alex, our Triple J breakfast crew, saying they're just taking a week off, they're slack, they're a bit soft. They said to him, you work 2 hours a week, you're soft. I bet you couldn't do what we do. Sam then countered, I could do it. In fact, I could do every show on Triple J. And here we are today, third hour into 24 hours of Sam Simmons broadcasting. He will do every show today. He will do the overnight show and go through until the early hours of tomorrow morning, winding up at 8 a.m. tomorrow with Tom and Alex on Triple J Breakfast.
I think the gravity of the whole situation is now actually here. Looking at you, Dr. Carl, just thinking, geez, what am I doing? What am I really doing?
What is he doing?
I'm ruining your segment.
No. We shall see, because I do believe you have expertise in
animal stuff. I know some animal stuff. I've got my Certificate 3 in animal handling. Animal husbandry.
There is a certificate in animal handling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about it.
Oh, it's about how you touch them good.
And so how long does it take to do the course, et cetera?
Oh, it's basically a TAFE course.
It takes, 6 months, a year, 1 hour?
Yeah, well, I did a lot of not really. You're going me, Dr. Carr.
No. What I want to do...
Mine was basically applied hands-on stuff via the zoo that I worked at.
Okay.
So a lot of it was animal enrichment, which is basically stimulating animals that are in captivity. So they basically forget they're in captivity, so stuff like that.
Oh,
in layman's terms, throwing a frisbee to a dog, that's animal enrichment.
But how long does the course take?
Mine went over 3 years.
Because, as you know, I'm a firm believer in education.
Yep.
And I had never heard of the course in animal handling.
Animal husbandry?
Well, I've heard of people saying, oh, well, we've got such and such on the TV show and he's the dog wrangler.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally didn't know. And there are people out there who are thinking, what would I like to do? And you are being a role model for them, because I didn't know there was a course in...
Well, that's kind of nice.
So going back to where you were implying that I was having a go at you, I wasn't. I was actually trying to find out about the course.
Well, this is via a zoo that I daren't name on air just through because of government logistics and stuff like that.
No, but that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, it is. It is.
But you're saying 24... You're
saying 24... you keep out of this.
I'm not a proper doctor, is all I'm trying to say.
Well, neither am I.
I'm not a real one.
Well, neither am I. I'm a medical doctor, not a PhD doctor. Right, but I remember as a medical doctor in the early days.
Yep.
Mate, we used to have to do these 100-hour shifts.
Not really in one go.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, how do you hold the scalpel after 92 hours?
Not well.
Are you serious? You do 100 hours straight?
We threatened to go on strike and we brought it down to 37 and a half hours.
What happens to the body at hour 74?
Not good.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I remember one time going through and seeing one of my fellow interns, and she was asleep on this digger's lap. He was about 95, and she was asleep on his lap, and I wanted to say, she needs her sleep. And she'd been awake for some incredible long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's not good for you.
So
In the context of today, 24 hours, Sam Simmons is going to be going through the night, and he's going to be pretty much doing stuff all day on the radio, having challenges thrown down. He has to be mentally and physically active and aware until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. What's it going to mean for Sam?
He'll go through a period where he wants to fall asleep. His ability will go down, and then there'll be a brief window where his ability will get better. But it'll be a mixture
of a creepy laugh.
Self-delusion and getting better. So there is a period when you're sleep deprived, when your brain does function better for a little while, but then that rapidly goes away, and then you're back to being functioning really badly. And driving is dangerous, because it is not against the law to be tired and drive. And yet when you are tired and driving, your performance is as bad as if you are drunk and driving. So it's an interesting thing we will be able to watch as we tune into you over
Well,
the
luckily
next
we're
day.
Recording it all. It's on your radio until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. Sam Simmons will be here because it's Sam Simmons Day, and we're capturing it online too, triplej.net.au. If you're on Twitter, hashtag 24Simmons, that's 24Simmons, to be part of this big fat party that we're having today at Sam's expense. We are talking science, though, as we do every Thursday morning, and if you've got a call question for Dr. Carl, please give us a call. 1300 055 36 is the text line. Sam is here as well. He's Dr. Sam for this hour, just like I'm Dr. Zan. It works somehow. And he's got animal questions if you've, animal answers if you've got an animal question. Also, if you've got an answer for us and you can't get through, you can always tweet directly at Dr. Carl. Should we jump into it, Carl?
Now, immediately, sooner if not later.
Kirsten's calling in from the Sunshine Coast. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I was just wondering, it's not an animal question, but it's a music question. When you have a large crowd singing together, like at a concert or something like that, why does it always sound? Why do they always sound in key and in tune when most of them probably aren't at all singly, individually?
So en masse, they sound like they're in tune. That's a good question.
Okay, well, two answers. Firstly, I've often heard them sing out of tune, but when I think about it, they're not that out of tune. And maybe it's this phenomenon where, in some cases, the average can be close to reality. So some people sing too high, some people sing too low, and in between there's enough little average out to being in tune. And that's a really weak answer, but it's the best I can come up with.
Sam, anything?
No.
I'll give you
completely not. It doesn't make sense. The question doesn't make sense.
There's a phenomenon called the wisdom of the commons, or the average of the crowd. And the experiment was done with Kevin Kelly from Wired magazine. And what they did was got a movie theatre, and they got people to come into the movie theatre, and this was back in the old days, back in the 1990s, when the internet wasn't that well known, and they had people come into the theatre, they didn't know what was going to happen to them, and they had joysticks to fly an aeroplane, and nobody told them anything. And without them making a plan, like you work this and I work that, between them, the couple of hundred people in the theatre worked out that they were operating the plane that was on the screen. They worked out how to fly it, get it to take off, fly, do a bit of wobbles in the air and actually land. But without communicating, not only saying, hey, quickly, you over there in row 4, you put the wheels down, all that sort of stuff. They worked out between them. And then that's one example of the so-called wisdom of the commons. Another case is when they were looking for the submarine, the nuclear-powered submarine, the Thresher, that went down in the Atlantic. And there were different areas of expertise with trying to work out where it would go down. There were, for example, people who knew ocean currents, people who knew stuff about the weather up above, people who knew stuff about people getting tired and not behaving well because they have a timetable when there's morning and night in a nuclear submarine, and people who knew stuff about the reactor. And all of these people came up with their average idea of where, if in their field of knowledge something would have gone wrong, the submarine would have gone down. They averaged it all out, and the submarine was really, really close to the average of what all these different people in different fields thought. So getting back to Kirsten's question, I don't really know, but I think it could be an average thing. And who would be the person who'd know, Dr. Zan? Would it be a musicologist?
Choirmaster.
Choirmaster would probably know.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Or somebody who has run out of what they're supposed to sing on stage and said, well, get the audience to do it because I've forgotten the next words to the song.
Ben Folds in the country, I think he'd know. He likes a bit of a sing-along.
Yeah, Ben,
if Ben Folds is listening, please give us a call, 1300 055 36. Thanks so much for the call, Kirsten.
No worries.
See you later. Tim's on the line from Brisbane. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, doctors. How are you?
Great. What's your question?
My partner's cat has a bit of a problem. She loves bleach and tobacco. Now, you can't leave cigarettes out anywhere, otherwise the cat will get into it and eat them, and yeah, apparently it's really bad. It's not so much concerning. What's concerning is the bleach. Like, every single time you try to wash the bathroom or you wash the kitchen floor or something like that, the cat will just go mental and try lick it, and just the scent of it, like next door neighbours, like using bleach in their backyard, will just get a scent of it and just start rolling around.
Okay, look, can I ask a question? Do you actually clean the bathroom? Are you some sort of god among men that you clean the bathroom?
No, that's a partner. I just like watching the cat.
Okay, now I'll hand over. Now, I think this is an animal question, Dr.
Okay,
Sam.
Okay, if it's bleach, I'm thinking straight away there is maybe, I think maybe your cat's a junkie. So I think it's cleaning its needles. It's having a cigarette afterwards. I think your cat is a junkie.
It's having sex with the bleach and it's having a cigarette up. No,
cleaning its needles. No, what I'm thinking it is, this might be true. I think there might be something in this. The bleach, ammonia,
Zan is
cat urine.
I'm just stepping away from the mic.
Well, I'm thinking cat urine, bleach, there might be some type of tie in there with ammonia, and then I'm thinking tobacco, some type of maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a derivative of catnip or something there. There's something in tobacco leaf that's kind of like reminiscent of catnip, maybe? I don't know.
Okay, so we haven't got to the stage. Now, we haven't got to the stage where we have enough information, where with this raw information we can then start applying basic principles. What we're doing is throwing a bunch of ideas out there. Mm-hmm. One thing I do know is that in human society, apart from the regular people who smoke tobacco, schizophrenics, they love tobacco, and this is a fairly consistently observed thing.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying that your cat is mad, but this is yet another thing to throw into the mix. With, and not implying that people with schizophrenia are mad because it's a tragic condition. Mm. But what I'm saying is we don't know.
Okay.
We've got a bunch of ideas flying in the air, but nothing definite.
But there's some good ideas going on there.
Would it be something I try and stop, or should I just embrace it?
I think bleach can be bad for a cat.
Like, yeah, I imagine so as well. Like yeah. when I'm scrubbing the bath with a cat, I will not use bleach. I'll use handmade soaps.
Okay, right, okay.
Okay, Tim, thanks so much for the call, mate. Yeah. We're talking science. Yes, I promise,
we're talking science.
a little bit looser today because Sam Simmons is in the house and he's going to be here till Stumps 8 a.m. tomorrow morning for Sam Simmons Day. Dr. Carl's here too. 1-300-055-36 with your science questions. Give us a buzz.
The agony, the ecstasy, extreme physical challenges, plus a live goat. Sam Simmons for 24 hours on Triple J.
Yeah, and we just played Sam's Town for you because we are living in Sam's Town today. A special day here at Triple J, a little bit out of the ordinary. Sam Simmons is broadcasting for 24 hours, currently joining Dr. Carl in the nude, may I add.
I'll pop my shirt. I'll put my shirt back on because it's a little bit chilly on my nips.
You're still sitting in your jocks next to Dr. Carl.
Well, I'm not. I'm actually completely nude. I'm under a modesty towel, Carl.
Can you confirm that, Carl? I didn't want to have my ghoulies out
in front of you. I've not met you before. It would be quite rude.
It is traditional to wear something between your anus and the furniture.
Yeah, exactly. It is. I know that old tradition.
Thanks for saying the word anus.
Remember that old song?
Well, the anal sphincter is actually my second favourite body part, but we'll go on to another question in a moment.
Well, it leads perfectly into the next question that we have. And if you have one for us, 1-300-055-36, Sam Simmons may actually be able to be a contributor to this science hour because he knows quite a lot about animals.
Animals.
But let's stay on the anus tip for a while because Jason is calling in from Stanmore. Hi, Jason.
Hi, doctors. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Jason. Welcome.
Fairly well. What's your question?
My question goes along the anus's path. It's, last night I saw Dr. Carl's talk and he was talking about the fecal implants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question is then, why did they choose to use the fecal implant rather than the many probiotic range of products from yogurts and things that are available in the commercial market?
Okay, so the story was of a 61-year-old woman who'd had back surgery, and because she couldn't move and she ended up getting pneumonia. And then they gave her antibiotics to knock off the pneumonia, and unfortunately it knocked off the good bacteria in her gut. Clostridium difficile moved in. Over the last 10 years, Clostridium difficile has increased in the community by 50 times. It is mentioned on one out of every 250 death certificates in the United Kingdom as a cause of death.
Mm.
It has increased in virulence and in resistance to antibiotics. And this woman had got a really bad dose of it and was dying. After 8 months, she had lost 27 kilograms of weight and was so weak she was confined to a wheelchair. She also had diarrhea every 15 minutes of the hour, every 15 minutes, day and night, so she was continually wearing a nap and she was going to die shortly. And then Dr. Kourouts, K-H-O-R-U-T-S, published a paper about his work in the Journal of Clinical Gastroenterology in which he did a fecal transplant from her husband. It was easy, no legal worries, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
And the next day, after 8 months of continual diarrhea, she stopped having diarrhea, and the day after that, she had her first solid bowel motion, and within a month, the clostridium had gone. Within a year, she was back to normal. And so your question is, why use a fecal transplant rather than just any one of the probiotic yogurts?
Yeah, well, they all claim to correct and balance the bacteria in your gut.
No, they're lying. The microbial system in your gut has 90% of the cells in your body. You might think, Jason, that you are, Jason, the product of your mother and father loving each other very much your age plus 9 months earlier. But only 10% of the cells in your body come from that union. 90% of the cells in your body exist in the 1.5 kilograms of microbes that live in your gut, vast majority of them bacteria. And they are such a complicated ecosystem with many, many thousands of bacteria to try and come along and say, oh, we'll give you lactobacillus, which is one single bacterium. We'll give you just lactobacillus, and that will reset everything. That is just impossible to believe. Now, if you actually go to my ABC homepage on the government radio station, there's the Great Moments in Science section, and there's a story about microbes might make you fat, and also about this fecal implant thing. And yeah. The whole point is that in the yogurt, you get one. In her husband's feces, there were tens of thousands.
Can we just back up one moment?
Yes. Why would they think of doing it?
No. I can understand because, like, in the animal world, I'll just say with koalas, like a joey will eat the pap of the mother. So it's
pap.
It's koala scat.
What's scat?
Pap is scat
pap,
poo.
Pap equals
poo.
Scat equals poo.
Yeah.
Oh, so pap and scat are animal terms for animal handle terms for animal feces.
Yeah, really? Yeah. So, okay. And I think the joey has to eat the pap to get the microbes or organisms in its gut so it can actually digest.
Say that again? The joey baby
eats the mother's pap.
Really?
So it gets the.
I never knew that.
Right, gets those microbes in its gut so it can digest eucalyptus properly.
How does it get them?
By eating the scat.
But where does it find them?
In the pap.
Hang on, are pap and scat the same thing?
They are.
But what I mean is, where does it physically find them if the mother is up a tree?
In the arsehole.
Oh, so it reaches into the anus and picks them out.
In the koala's arse. Well, no, the mother feeds the pap to the joey.
Oh, the mother reaches around.
Well, it doesn't reach around. I imagine it just comes out. But it feeds the pap.
She gets,
this does make sense.
That noise is Zan banging her head.
I'm actually crying.
It does, like, it does make sense, though, because I was wondering how does the, if there is a fecal...
So the mother reaches around to get the feces.
Well, no, I think basically maybe just gets the joey and shoves it up its arse or something like that, or basically... It does. It
anus,
feeds
anus,
them. It actually
anus.
Feeds
Let's
it from the mouth.
At a higher level here. Anus.
Yes.
So the mother feeds the baby.
Yes.
And this helps set the bacteria...
Get the microbes happening in the joey's gut.
Because those microbes, without them... If you get a mouse and you raise a mouse totally microbe free,
mm-hmm.
and by the way, this is all coming out in my next book in November. But if you raise a mouse totally microbe free, it weighs 30% less, but has to eat 40% more.
Okay,
it eats more and gets less out of it.
Right.
Those guys in your gut give you 10 to 30, 40% of the nutrients you get.
Well, that explains what would happen in the koalas
do it.
In the koalas, in the
koalas.
I was at a zoo in New York, and I heard a kid say, "Oh, mummy, what's an emu?" And then they said, "Can we have a look at the koala?"
I love koalas.
I love a koala.
The koala
and their pap.
But I think that's kind of interesting because so the mother is feeding that directly to the joey, and then the joey's got the microbes in there as to how it knows that, what innate process it is.
You what know, was Jason's question?
Jason, it was about the fecal implant. The reason why I stopped was like, how does the actual fecal implant happen with humans? Is it a similar thing? Is it fed directly into the stomach of that woman? Was she? How was the fecal implant done?
Okay, they use the black snake, the colonoscope.
Okay, so that goes right down the gut.
Diameter? No, the other end.
Okay,
so it's a diameter of your thumb and about a meter long.
Yeah.
So they put it up her husband's back end, and then went up
into
the
hers.
Up the ascending colon, and then turned and went across the transverse colon, and then down into the other colon. So they went over to the right colon, which mm-hmm. is the ascending colon, and they gathered 25 grams of feces. They then took it all out, added it to 300 mils of water, and blended it in the kitchen whiz, and then squirted it.
Into her.
Oh,
right, there you go.
Into the same place, and it reset her bacteria. So, Jason, after all of this, are you still happy, Jason? So you see, the point is...
You started this, Jason.
Yeah, but the point is that they went for human feces rather than just a bacteria, because the claims that they make are way out of proportion.
Yeah, she's not going to get fixed with a
bit of yogurt.
Ski double up.
No, it's good. You can't mention commercial names here. We're
closing
down.
Thanks for the call, Jason. Thank you so much for that
call.
Thank
you. Cheers.
And that question.
Darling, your mascara's all running.
I'm dying. I'm actually dying. Tim's on the line from Brisbane. Tim. Save us, Tim. What's your question?
I just wanted to know if snakes can interbreed, like a black snake with a brown snake or a black snake with a non-venomous snake.
Does it matter?
Okay, well, as far as I can remember, what I know about snakes is that they don't have a penis as such, but they have what's called a hemipene. So it's actually two penises. And to love another snake very much, they have to wrap themselves around because they don't have arms.
Into its cloaca.
Cloaca, which is a Latin word meaning sewer. So whereas we have different pipes for feces and for urine, they've got and for sex, they have one for everything. And I imagine that they could crossbreed. And really, the person we would need would be a herpetologist. And now here's a question without notice for Dr. Sam.
I've actually got no idea about this one.
Okay. I researched on the internet
last night,
and it said that they've successfully bred a cottonmouth with a copperhead over in America or something.
It'd be not impossible, providing that they have the same number of chromosomes in each species.
Mm.
So we humans have got all 46 chromosomes, 23 pairs, but then if you go for the gorillas and the chimpanzees, they've got different numbers, so you can't crossbreed there, even if you tried it in a laboratory. But the question without notice, ready for this, Dr. Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Putting you on the spot here. Mm-hmm. You've had it easy so far.
Mm-hmm. Sure have.
How, at a scientific conference, do you recognise the fact that you've turned up against in the middle of a bunch of herpetologists?
How do I know?
Yeah.
Something about
they don't even say anything. You just look at their body, you look at their hands, and...
Yeah, I'm hanging out with a bunch of nerds.
No, you look at their hands. Look at their hands.
Scales? No. Oh, right, they've got snake bites?
No.
Yeah, extra fingers?
They miss, a lot of herpetologists are missing a distal phalanx on one of their digits. They're
really?
Missing the end bit. Because whereas you and I would go, oh, my God, a snake, and start running, they go, wow, hi, little fella, unk. And then get
bang.
Bitten.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd know not to do that.
Oh, but they're so cute. Most snakes won't do it. And it's only the occasional one that does. And they're with snakes all the time.
Tim from Brisbane, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tim.
Yeah,
so probably they can breathe. Thank you, Dr. Tim.
We are talking science. Would you believe it? 1-300-055-536. Dr. Carl is with us till midday. Dr. Sam is sitting in as well. Dan here with you, Dr. Carl and Dr. Sam sitting in as we celebrate 24 hours of Sam Simmons till 8 a.m. tomorrow on Triple J. We're only at the beginning. Mm. If you're wondering why Sam is naked and sitting in here with Dr. Carl, you can relive some of the antics so far at Tom and Alex's blog. They are chatting to you all about it. There's also a dedicated page collecting some of the stuff that you're tweeting about at triplej.net.au. Heaps of videos and photos online, including nudie shots, triplej.net.au. If you want to watch what's happening, listen to it on your radio, though, all through the day, into the evening, overnight until tomorrow morning at 8 here on Triple J. Right now, we are talking science. It is a normal Thursday. Dr. Carl's joining us and 1-300-055-536, the number if you want to ask a science question. Michael's calling in from Nowra. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Great.
Hi, Dr. Michael. Welcome. Hello. Good morning.
Thank you. Yeah, we've just returned from a trip over to Peru, and we noticed there were loads of eucalyptus trees growing at altitudes well over 4,000 metres. And we 4, were just
4,000?
Yeah, around Lake Titicaca and around the Inca Trail. And we were wondering what would they need to do to those trees to get them to grow at that altitude, considering there's nothing like that altitude in Australia. And for Sam, on the zoological aspects of it, could you get koalas to acclimatise to 4,000 metres?
No, not around Lake Titicaca, I'm pretty sure.
Mm.
Yes.
Ah, eucalypts are popular around the world. They're found in California. And when we walked across Spain, we were surprised to see eucalypts all over the place.
Yeah.
And they're a bit of a problem because they drop the leaves and they didn't bring over the soil and the bacteria and all of the rest of the ecosystem needed to break down the leaves. And so they have been a popular export from Australia to different parts around the world. With regard to the height, firstly, in Australia, we do have Kosciuszko, which is not Australia's tallest mountain.
Kosciuszko.
And do you know that Poland was the second country in the world after America to come up with a formalised democratic constitution?
Wow.
Beat everybody else in Europe.
Hmm. Back to the mountains.
So that's 2.2 kilometres, and you can have eucalypts growing all the way up to the top. So it's not impossible that the eucalypts could grow to 4 kilometres, although you're getting close to the so-called tree line, which I thought was of the order, sorry to use the old money, 10,000 feet, ballpark figure. So, Michael, at what height did you see them? You saw them 4 kilometres.
Yeah, just over 4,000 metres where they'd been planted in gardens and other areas where they'd been obviously grown for a fair while and seemed to be, you know, producing from seed, and the local used them, the locals used them as a big part of their fuel supply for their cooking and what have you.
Oh, because they grow very quickly. Yeah. And did you have any difficulty in breathing at that altitude?
Oh, it was a little bit tough, but, you know, sort of after a week or so, we got a bit used to it, yeah.
Okay, I reckon the ability to live at a high altitude was inherent in the genome of the eucalypt, and it was expressed only in South America.
Thanks so much for the call, Michael.
Cheers, guys.
See you later. Deshaun's calling in from North Sydney. Good morning, Deshaun.
Deshaun,
morning,
welcome.
Doctors, how are you?
Hello. What's your question?
My question is about Tesla coils. Dr. Cole, I'm thinking of making a Tesla coil, and with the inherent voltages of, say, 1.2 million volts, at that, it would be a very low amperage, maybe 0.0025 of a milliamp. Would that have any effect on my skin? Like, would I be able to touch that kind of voltage? Because it ionizes the air around it, so it just dissipates into the air.
Ooh. I don't know. I haven't worked with a Tesla coil. I know people love them and they're a lot of fun.
What's a Tesla coil? Can you explain?
Can you explain a Tesla coil for the audience there, Deshaun? Because I don't know. I've completely forgotten.
A Tesla coil is like it was invented by Nikola Tesla. It was it's like a big transformer. It converts like a little voltage to a really big voltage, but the little voltage in this case is 30,000 volts, and you convert it to a big voltage, and it's just purely for display nowadays.
And where do you get your 30,000 volts from? From a car ignition coil?
No, I was thinking of using like a neon sign transformer.
Okay, but the point is, though, that it's simply a transformer.
That's exactly right.
But instead of putting in a low voltage, you put out 30,000, put it in 30,000, so you get millions out at the other end.
Yeah, that's right.
The break, I forget the breakdown voltage of air, but it's of the order of thousands of volts per meter, per centimeter, so it can definitely jump, and you're worried about whether it'll bite you.
I'm expecting it to jump. I'm wondering whether it will have any effect on my body, like whether it will hurt me if I were to touch that electricity.
Ah, what I'm worried about is whether it can kill you, and I don't know. I would talk to people who have made Tesla coils, and there's a lot of knowledge in this field. I've spoken to people who've been involved in it, but I've always followed whatever safety procedures they said. I've used them at zoos and museums. I think they had one down at a museum in Melbourne. So look,
I think I have one at Questacon as well. I think.
Yeah, look, I've failed
in
on
camera.
This one. Can't
look, I do
it.
Know from the movie Transformers.
yes,
the Michael Bay.
Let's answer a science question with that as the
but
preamble.
Optimus Prime. No, I know nothing about Tesla coils. I don't even know what it is.
Hey, thanks so much for the call. Sorry, we couldn't get an answer for you, Deshaun.
Sorry.
Thanks for the call.
Give us on Twitter. Go on Twitter.
I just had a tweet in as well. Hottiehead tweeted in.
Yes.
Eucalypts also grow at over 2,000 meters in the Nilgiris Mountains of southern India.
Mm. Oh, really? Ah, and if you can Twitter into Dr. Carl, D-O-C-T-O-R-K-R-L, give us some answers. We'd love them.
Hey, we have a question on the line from Daniel in Perth. Good morning, Daniel.
Dr. Daniel, welcome.
Good morning, Graham. Dr. Carl,
thanks,
Sam.
Thanks so much for waiting on the line, Daniel. What's your question?
No worries. I was just wondering if insects have pain receptors.
Number one, I don't know, in the sense that I have not read a peer-reviewed article about the pain receptors of insects. But number two, working from basic principles, it makes sense. If something's going to bite your leg off or gnaw at you, you want to know about it.
Mm.
And the pain receptor is a special pathway, different from normal sensation. So we've got the traditional five senses, and then we've got these 13 other senses, which include thermo sense and pain and itch. And pain, we only discovered the pain receptors, the pain nerves in the last 10 years. And I read an article about a Pakistani family, which had a mutation of one of their the sodium pumps on their cells that led to, wait for it, they felt no pain.
Oh. Mm.
They literally felt no pain, and they were circus performers, and they could do these amazing tricks where jump off buildings and not feel it because they didn't feel it, and they all died in their 20s and 30s from the injuries that they got because they literally did not feel it.
Mm.
Do you imagine like the American government or like the army or something like, would want to harness that power to like have super soldiers or something like that? Is that a dumb question or no?
There are no dumb questions.
Right.
All questions lead to enlightenment.
There was actually an article, piece on Hungry Beast a couple of weeks ago about medication, pills, drugs that are making these super soldiers, helping people who can withstand things that normal human bodies can't.
So they do take drugs that help them stay awake for a long time, but also seem to make them a bit smarter. And it seems to be that the side effects are not that huge at the moment. And I think Hungry Beast did this thing about the climate change video as well.
Last night, if you missed out on Hungry Beast, they did a video where they had a whole bunch of climate change scientists.
Doing
hip hop.
Yeah, because you have all these people coming on TV and saying, "I'm not a climate scientist, but it's all crap." And these people are saying, "Please, sir, I'm a climate scientist. It's not crap," but they were saying it in hip hop. It was so funny.
If you want to check it out and catch up, you can watch it on abc.net.au/iview. Let's go to one more question before a song. Rachel's on the south coast of New South Wales. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
What's your question?
It's kind of for Sam and Dr. Carl. My dog, it's kind of funny too, he has a farting problem, which means that we think he might be a nervous farter, and we're wondering if that's possible for a dog.
Well, hang on, what do you mean nervous farter?
What are you doing to elicit that fart?
He only farts when people are around or not around?
When we're around. Like, if we let him inside of a night when we're just watching telly and stuff, he comes in and he just lets a silent one off. But it's so bad that, like, we can't breathe. Like, we all have to leave.
It's a silent one.
Also known as silent but deadly.
Yeah, and it is deadly. It sticks to your clothes. It's like you can
breathe.
It does. You know what? Sounds like his glands actually need to be... have you ever had his anal glands pushed or fixed or taken to the vet? Well, you do. They need to be drained sometimes in dogs.
Really?
Anal glands?
Yeah, they need to be, essentially milked. So you take them to the vet.
Traumatizing.
When...
Anal glands in dogs need to be milked?
They do sometimes.
I know about some of them, where they reach into the anus of the cat and scrape out the musk that you put into perfume.
Well, I'm not asking you to do that.
No.
But it is a thing, like some dogs actually, they back up a little bit and they do need to be cleared out. So you take them off to the vet. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something to do with processed food. I'm just saying this. I'm just chucking some ideas out there.
Chucking some non-peer-reviewed ideas out there. Well, this gets back to our point at the beginning
of
the show.
Maybe a more natural diet.
The beauty... Now, Sam, do this experiment for me. Put your hands together.
You're talking about pumping anal glands, and then you're asking for an experiment.
How would you describe this to the audience, what we're doing with our hands?
Interlocking my hands in a cup kind of shape. If I was to do, here's a church, here's a steeple, I'd up here are the
people. Bring it the other way around. So you've got a cup.
Yep.
Now, imagine that you can put some water in that cup.
Yep.
Okay, now imagine that what you've got there is the anal sphincter.
Yeah.
And on the inside of it, what you've got is solid, liquid, and gas.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in humans, 14 times a day, that opens to release only the gas, but not the solid or the liquid. Isn't that an amazing thing?
It is amazing, but I'm thinking about gravity and actually the water sitting below and the gas above.
Yeah. So how does it do it?
I guess the way you angle it.
But people can...
You're right.
We don't know, Dr. Rachel. I think we're...
I don't know. I'm just chucking something out there. I'm just thinking it might be processed food.
We don't know what to do when he does it because it's not like we can rouse on him because he's really cute and
Does he do it outside?
Yeah, he does. When everyone's sitting around outside, he does it.
So it's not as though he does it only inside because if it was to do it only inside, maybe you could train him out of doing it inside.
No, it's every time there's just like a group of people sitting around.
He's a crop duster. He's a crop dusting dog.
Is it worthwhile going to see a vet?
Yeah, but it's kind of an awkward thing to go in and see the vet about.
I'm not
a big fan of walking in with my dog and saying...
Vets are all over it. They've seen worse.
He's not going to judge you. He's going to judge the dog.
Well,
absolutely fine. Do not carry this on.
Banjo doesn't deserve to be judged. He's beautiful. He just has a little problem.
Stop whinging about it.
No. Look, I remember when I was doing one of my possibly most favourite ever medical terms was when I did gastroenterology, and I loved it because of the intellectual challenge where you can diagnose what's wrong with a patient just by asking questions in about 60 or 70% of cases, and then by laying your hands on their body, you can then get another 20%, and you only need to get the remaining 20% with diagnostic tests. And it was a lovely intellectual exercise combined with the fact that you could often do some good at the end of the day. But here was the point. Whenever you'd start to say things to people like, and, you know, asking the questions, and do your feces float? Some people would say yes or no, and other people would say, no, what do you think, I am a pervert? But look, it's not just terrorists that go to the toilet and have bowel motions.
Everyone has a look.
Yeah, so, in fact, in Germany, the toilets are designed with a special little looking tray. Mm. So what I'd recommend
is, look,
do not feel bad about asking. It could be that there's something other wrong that could be easily fixed. And then you can have your dog inside and not have it fart.
Go forth to the vet, Rachel. We have faith in you. It's no question is too embarrassing for a vet, believe me. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
We've got time for another couple of questions. Don't forget, if you've come in halfway and you're wondering what the hell's going on, you can catch up. Dr. Carl will be podcast, as always, triplej.net.au, the place to go. While you're there too, check out what's been going on so far, as the other thing we're doing today is making Sam Simmons broadcast for 24 hours. He said he could do it. We've put him up to the challenge.
I'm doing it.
And he is doing it. We're in almost up to hour number four, and you can catch up with what's happened so far at triplej.net.au. Tom and Alex have been working on a blog, actually, there to catch up with stuff, and there's plenty of videos and photos online as well. A few more questions, though, to throw at you, Dr. Carl and Dr. Sam. Corey's calling in from Newson in South Australia. Hi, Corey.
How you going?
Great. Hi, Dr. Corey. What's your question?
I was just wondering, we were hanging out around a campfire the other night, and the question came up, what is fire?
Fire is the one of the states of matter that is not solid, liquid, or gas.
Yep.
In a solid, you have atoms. Remember the model of the atoms with the central core and the electrons going around it?
Yep.
And they're all lined up next to each other. They're locked in. You get a block of steel, you put it on the floor, it'll stay there. It's not moving anywhere. Liquid, the bonds between the atoms are a little bit weaker. So if you get a bucket of water and then tip it out on the floor, it'll spread in all directions.
Yep.
But still, in each case, you have an atom with a central core and the electrons attached to that atom. Then you go to the next stage, which is a gas. And in a gas, once again, you have the central core with the electrons, but and the bonds between them are not very strong, so they can fill the whole room. They'll be on the ceiling, on the floor, near the window. In a plasma, the fourth state of matter, and there are many more, but in a plasma, you have broken down the atom. You've got the central core, but the electrons are no longer married to that atom. They float around, being shared between all of the atoms. 90-something percent of the universe is plasma. Stars. Stars are made of plasma, and you can create a plasma temporarily in a fire.
Mm.
So what you've got is burning at a high temperature, and it's enough to rip the electrons off from the atoms.
Thanks for the call, Corey.
Thanks a lot.
That's the best response you can get, isn't it?
That's an amazing question, though.
It was an amazing question.
I've never thought that. What is fire?
I think, yeah, that's the thing. Absolutely. The most obvious questions are often the best. Kate's calling in from Margaret River, the beautiful Margaret River this morning. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Dr. Zan. How are you?
Great. What's your question?
I was curious as to why red meats such as lamb and beef are red and things like pork and chicken are white.
My understanding is poor. Because I haven't read a peer-reviewed article on it, which I'm heading for this afternoon, but my understanding is as follows, that it's the density of the blood vessels. If you have a strongly exercised muscle, it has a rich blood supply and lots of blood vessels going through and lots of blood to give it the red colour.
That makes sense.
But that implies that on birds that fly, the breast meat should be dark.
As it is.
Is it?
Well, look at pigeon meat or quail meat.
Yeah, dark.
Or flying bird. You actually do meat. It's a dark meat. Emu as well.
Quails
really,
don't
really,
fly
really
that
dark
much,
meat.
They're more waddle. Quails are more of a waddling bird.
Okay, well, that'd be a whiter meat. I've got that wrong. But emu meat is crimson red.
Emu meat is
crimson. And they're a really, really active animal.
Ah. And speaking of birds, what bird has the Latin name of Puffinus puffinus?
Puffin.
No, the Manx shearwater.
Yeah, what?
They stuffed around with your head on that one. They did. I know, it's a stupid thing. But we think that's the answer. And I'm actually going to, Kate, just for you, I'm going to put that into my, I'm going to find that one out and get the answer and put it in my next book for you.
But also cows kind of graze. Yeah. They don't really, they don't run a lot, do they?
Yeah, that's
slow moving.
See, that's the thing that bothers me about it, because cows, maybe it's that they're very heavy, half a ton. And so even just grazing is hard work.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
You see, that's a damn good question. That was a very deep point, Grasshopper.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm learning.
Thanks for the call, Kate.
I'm on the Padawan.
Can I just say that this has been maybe one of the most entertaining Dr. Carl segments. Always amazing. But you two, what a team.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I owe it all to my good colleague over there.
And Dr. Carr, thank you for playing along with Sam Simmons Day. We will see you next week for a very normal, which is never normal, Dr. Carr Science Hour.
Thank you. And thank you for explaining to me animal husbandry. And kids, if you want to do that, if anybody wants to get a career with animals, speak to Dr. Sam.
Go to TAFE.